Coming up in the Authorpreneur Podcast. Welcome to the 98th episode of the Authorpreneur Podcast. Honestly, I can't believe my podcast has come this far. But back to the matter at hand. In this episode, I will share feedback from my editor in relation to my Writing the Dark experiment, which I talked about in the previous episode. Welcome to the Authorpreneur Podcast. I'm your host, mystery author Amelia D. Hay. On this podcast, I will bring you writing, book marketing, and self-publishing advice so that you can create your dream author business, build your author platform, and be creatively independent. You can find the episode show notes and lots more information on the podcast page at authorpreneurpodcast.com/podcast. Hello, writers. Toward the end of March, I started working with my editor on The Locked Room, and in this episode, I'm going to share the mistakes that were found in that manuscript in comparison to the previous stories that I've written. And the mistakes that, these are the mistakes I typically, well, there's a pattern of me making these mistakes, if that makes sense. Those kind of mistakes, the mistakes I make quite frequently. So without further ado, let's get into the episode. Throughout this episode, I'll be referencing tools and services that I've used. If you're interested in reading the transcript or would like links to anything that I've mentioned in the show, then check out the very long blog post or edited transcript at authorpreneurpodcast.com/TAP044. And if you're new to this podcast, I want to say a huge thank you for stopping by and trying out my show. To those of you who have been faithfully listening, thank you for regularly listening in and supporting me. Your support means more to me than you know. And one last thing, I just want to thank Paul Teague for taking the time to buy me a few coffees and leaving a nice message. Your support and kind words mean a lot to me, so thank you. So I'm hoping to make this episode really short and just focused on the what the experience was like working with my editor on this book, because it was very different to, well, writing the book was very different to the previous books. And I'm wondering, and I wanted to talk about this and sort of compare it to the other books to see if the actual editing experience was different. So as expected, mistakes were made in my manuscript. After all, that's why I hired an editor. So what were these mistakes? These are mistakes I do see in other, in my previous books. And also I want to sort of address the elephant in the room. The cycling through the book doesn't pick up every mistake. That's why you need an editor. So doing the cycling doesn't necessarily make less work for the editor, but what it does is it crunches down the time. Well, I was hoping it would crunch down the time that I would spend revising, and it would take away the pain of that for me. And I feel like it really has achieved that, but every book is different. So the mistakes I made were like word repetition, dangling and misplaced modifiers, occasional point of view slips, and unnecessary dialogue tags. For some reason, I find it hard to tell whether these characters have individual voices, because in my head they do, but on paper, and I tend to use excessive, unnecessarily dialogue tags as a sort of, I guess I use it like as a crutch, where I will describe the action, and because, you know, there's the character does something while they're talking, it's pretty obvious that they're talking, but I will still put in like some kind of dialogue tag for some reason, and it's not always, or I'll say like James said with a whisper, and really I should just say he whispered. I'm quite wordy, and it's just a mistake that I make. The other thing that I do is I make vague, what is it called? Vague antecedents. And this is when the pronoun doesn't clearly reference the word before it. So the fix was to change the pronoun to the name of the character. For instance, when there's like, sometimes there can be more than one, you know, person, I'm talking about more than one person in a sentence, and it can be kind of hard. Like the word before it, I don't know why I'm mansplaining this, but the word before it doesn't reference the pronoun. So I've made the the fix for that is to make the sentence less complicated and sort of talk about and replace the pronoun with the character name. The other thing I do is I use present tense words, and these pull the reader out of me, my past tense narrative. So I'll use words like this, these, here, now, and realistically, I really need to change that. Well, in the editing, the editor has changed that to that, those, there, then, or has suggested a revision on the sentence. And I will often pose narrative questions where I kind of break the fourth wall, but sometimes this is also the way James sort of thinks. He sort of says, because he's a little sarcastic, sometimes he poses the questions and it sounds like I'm breaking the fourth wall. And I think that sometimes this confuses my editor, because my editor is American, and for some reason, sometimes I don't think she understands his sarcastic nature sometimes. Maybe she does, or she just considers this breaking the fourth wall and doesn't like it, and she asked me to edit it out. The other thing is I have an issue with toward versus to, and this again was seen in the locked room. So I know why I make some of these mistakes, and the reason these mistakes are made is because when I'm writing the first draft, I am quite conscious that I'm not constructing my sentences according to a pattern, to a predictable pattern. So I like to vary them. So I found a screenshot of different ways to construct a sentence just so it's in the forefront of my mind, because I don't want to create more work for myself as I go along. So I sort of think, well, I've said, I don't want to sort of say he or too often. Like, I want to vary it and make the narrative interesting, because that's my job, right, is to make the story interesting and readable. So I do that, and I think sometimes when I do this, I create overly sort of long, complicated sentences, and it leads to me making these mistakes. But I would rather keep up this habit of deliberately constructing sentences that are very different to each other than create sentences that are super predictable, which will lead to me doing a lot more work and revision, which is what I'm trying to avoid. So I would rather just continue as I'm going, knowing that I'm probably going to make these mistakes and know that my line editor is going to correct them. And I'm not quite sure if they're frustrated about it, but I don't want to ask, because this is why I've decided that I'm going to pay them for this, knowing that I kind of know I'm making these mistakes, but for me it's hard. At some point it becomes hard for me to find these mistakes and to fix them. Grammarly and Pro Writing Aid don't find all of these, fun facts. So I've heard people say that you can use Grammarly and Pro Writing Aid and not use a line editor. That I disagree with 100%, because I put my book through multiple passes of Grammarly and Pro Writing Aid, like one before my alpha reader uses it, another after I submit that book to my beta reader, and another, and I think after I make those changes, I will then go and put it through again, those two same programs, before I submit it to my editor. And these mistakes still crop up. Like, they're not, so I really wouldn't recommend using them in place of an editor. You can definitely use it to help you create better prose, but it's definitely not a substitute. So if you've heard that advice, do not listen to it. Spend the money on an editor. I do think it is actually worth it. If you've heard something in this episode that was helpful to you and you'd like to support the show, then buy me a coffee for as little as $2 at buymeacoffee.com/authorADHay. The interesting thing is that my line editor raised no plot issues or issues surrounding character motivations. This just didn't come up. So in the past, my editor has made these kind of notes, which I've corrected in the editing phase, but this didn't come up for this in this particular phase of editing. Like, my alpha reader and beta reader didn't find any plot issues. There were sort of things where they've read the book and in hindsight they've said, actually, blah, blah, blah. But if you've completely read the book, But I tend to ignore those because as you read the book, if you get to assert the end and go, what about you didn't solve this, then that's to me is a plot issue. But if they get to the end and sort of go back and piece together all of the clues and then they start, do you know how some people will go looking for trouble and they find it? I don't consider that. I thought if you go looking for errors in a book, no matter what book it is, you will find them. And I'm not writing for that person. I'm writing for someone who enjoys reading murder mysteries. They will piece together the clues, but as long as the clues make sense and it's logical, that's my job. But if I'm not writing for that person who's looking for like the perfect book and they're going to pick everything apart, and because that's annoying. And that's not enjoyable. And I want my books to be enjoyable. So it's not, as I look back sometimes, I'm trying to think of an example, but I'm not. Because there's a difference between actually there's a plot issue. What about this? You haven't resolved this. I ignore comments where a reader is expecting me to resolve an issue at a certain point in the book, like this hasn't been resolved yet, because I sort of think it's fair game. As long as the last page isn't there, as long as I haven't written the last line, I have room to wrap up these issues. As long as it's before the denouement, like the return to the real world, I sort of feel like as long as that hasn't happened and I haven't written the last line, it's fair game. Like I can take as long or as short a time to wrap up these clues. And I also don't point out when people are just obviously lying, because I sort of think I am relying on, the intelligent deduction of the reader to realize this person is, their pants are on fire. Like this is, because to me, I don't want to have to spoon feed someone and say, well, they lied about this, because it's kind of obvious why people are lying. Sometimes James, one character does lie about something. I mean, actually, there are a lot of lies in all of my books. That's not spoilery. But a character will lie about something and James will sort of speculate as to why they're lying, but he won't go back and sort of figure out why they're lying and sort of question them about it, because no one's honest. And anyone who gets called out and gets caught, with their hand in the cookie jar and says, it wasn't me, they're not going to come back and sort of say to him, oh yeah, I lied about it for this reason, because that's not real. Someone who's covering their tracks or pretending to know something has chosen to lie over telling the truth. And you're rarely going to be honest about it when questioned by someone who isn't law enforcement. So I have to accept that because he's an amateur sleuth, they're not going to be 100% honest or explain why they did things. He can sort of go back and talk to other people and say, okay, this person says this, they've said this, and this might be the reason for them not telling the truth, because it's more likely that this thing has happened, because it's hard to know exactly what has happened unless there's CCTV and he's going to go through the CCTV and look, and that's boring, right? So when you do an investigation, he's just piecing together the pieces of the puzzle. He's looking at all the point of views and saying, this is most likely what happened, because that is what an investigation is. But because he's not a police officer, he doesn't have access to forensics and actual evidence. He can only sort of look at what's there and sort of piece it together in a logical way. So that's kind of what he does in this book and the other books, hopefully, fingers crossed. But I tend to ignore comments that are like someone saying, I don't like the order in which, this person has confessed, because when you do something wrong and you get caught and you end up confessing, you don't necessarily start at your most valid reason for doing something. You start with the easiest piece of the puzzle, because often being really honest about your true motivation, it's hard to say, well, I did this for this reason, and you, especially if it's kind of despicable, not that I go around doing despicable things like murdering people, but because that's what, the bad guys do in my books, I have to sort of consider, in reality, if you're making a confession, you're not going to start off with, I murdered them for this reason. You're going to start small. You're going to say, you're going to start with what triggered it, because what triggered it is easier to talk about than what led you to just sort of pick up an object and, you know, hurt somebody. You're not going to come out and sort of say it outright. And you sort of see this with, I don't know if you've watched a lot of true crime stuff, like the Chris Watts, he blames his wife for murdering his children. And then eventually the police kind of go, you know what, you have been honest about some things, but there's other things you're lying about. And they eventually sort of drag it out of him, but he doesn't sort of come out and say, yep, it was me. So this is the kind of thing I'm trying to create. So when someone questions, I don't like, you know, the way the order of this has come out, and they should start with the most logical, like their biggest, because quite often someone will have multiple motivations for doing something. And, you know, this, and they'll say they should start with the most pertinent, you know, motivation. And I disagree with that, because this isn't real. Because your biggest reason for doing something is often, it's hard to talk about. Like, I've been through traumatic things and I know what it's like to have to say, you know, this traumatic thing happened to me, and you don't just blurt it out one day. Like, you have to start, you start with something small that's easy to say, and you sort of back your way there, because it's hard. And I'm trying to sort of add a sense of realism. So if someone says something to me, whether it's an editor or a beta reader or even my mum, I do sort of consider, what would someone do in real life? I value that over someone sort of giving me feedback, because what I'm asking them to do is I'm asking them to pick my book apart. Yeah, so that's what I'm trying to – I'm taking a long time to explain that, but I ignore that kind of thing, and I value as long as the plot's okay. I don't particularly, if you're annoyed with the way that I've resolved all of the threads, then I tend to ignore that, because my job is to resolve the thread, not resolve a plot thread in the way that you want it to be resolved. Because if I do that, then no one's going to be happy. I'm not going to be happy, because I feel like I've been, you know, written into a book where I feel like I've writing in a straitjacket almost, and then, you know, not every reader is going to be happy. So I've learnt that as long as I've resolved the plot thread, I can highlight it in the book and say, here it is. I don't care if, like, you wanted it to happen, you know, in the middle of the book, or because that's not my job to resolve things when you want them to. It's just that I do resolve them. I know that's quite opinionated, and I feel like I'm probably offended somebody, but it's just how I see it. And yeah, I'll move on from that. So what did my editor say about my previous books? One of the things I did in my previous books is I started a scene too soon, and I didn't set up the next scene at the end of the previous scene in the story. And I feel like writing, I'm aware that I'm making this mistake, first and foremost. Actually, I'm going to pause here, because I got a cup of tea, and it's been 22 minutes, and I've let a green tea bag sit for, you know, infused for 22 minutes, and it's jasmine tea, so it's going to be strong. I know I've sort of screwed up the continuity of this, but I'm going to move right along. And coincidentally, my tea isn't actually that strong. So the mistake I make is I used to start a scene too soon, and then I sort of forget to set up the next scene in the story at the end of the previous one. I feel like writing Into the Dark has cured this, because at the end of every scene, I cycle through and I add more depth. So I think, and I'm also aware that I do this, that I have this problem anyway. So I feel like it's two things that have helped me with this. The fact that I know about that I do this, and I know not to do it now. And also I feel like writing Into the Dark has actually helped stop me from doing this, because there were no incidences in the locked room where I did this. They didn't, my editor didn't like the way that I ended the story. Like, they wanted like an extra scene, but I disagreed with that. I'm just going to move right along from that. Normally, there are moments in a book where I need to put in more setting description because it's quite sparse, the setting description I usually put in. So my editor will sort of say something and I'll end up adding in more setting description. The other thing is there have been moments when I've realized the story is incomplete and it's missing a scene during the edits where I've forgotten to show something, or I've realized actually I'd need to show this. In The Candidate, there was a scene where PC David Chan was at a new crime scene, and earlier in the book, James noticed something, and I showed the PC going back and finding this as it's a crucial piece of evidence. So I went back and I realized I need to show the police finding this. James knows it and the police need to be aware of it too. So that's what I did. And it was only, I think, an extra 600 words. I'm just going to open up the locked room and sort of check how I ended it, how I ended the story. Yeah, so it's the police turn up, they carry the body or bodies away, and they sort of, James is sort of trying to understand why certain people did certain things, and sort of Xavier's sort of saying to him, you're actually not going to be able to rationalize this and reach a place where you actually understand why someone did something, because maybe I won't spoil it. Because there was another point where he was so certain that another person had done this. There was actually a few people he was so certain about, and he was sort of speculating, actually, if this person didn't beat them to it, would they have actually done something to hurt him? Was this always going to be the outcome of this story? Or was there, you know, a moment where he may not have ended up being murdered, or was this something that's all was always going to happen? Like, if it wasn't this person, it was going to be somebody else, because the person who dies in this murder mystery is a despicable person, and that is a trope of the mystery genre. I use that trope in here along with the locked room trope. I can't show you because I realize it's super spoilery because it's the epilogue. It's the denouement sort of scene in the story. So yeah, and I think my editor wanted like a paragraph of him packing up and leaving. I think the scene of where the detective or amateur sleuth sort of looks over what's happened and sort of has a few thoughts about it is really important, but I hate when stuff is just wrapped up in a neat bow, like they go but they return back home and life is... Because you know he goes back home because this is a temporary location for him. He's at a bed and breakfast. And I just sort of feel like I don't want to end it like that because it's a bit flat. I would rather end it on him speculating about this. I sort of feel like that because no one else wanted that paragraph. If my beta reader or my mom or if somebody, you know, in the... or an ARC reviewer actually says, I kind of wish there was a bit more of a ending with a neat bow, then yeah, sure, I'll add that paragraph. But one person wanting this is, it's not really enough for me to make an edit on a book or add content to a book, especially when I feel like I've crossed all the T's, I've dotted the I's, and I've explained everything. For me, that's not enough reason to add something. I know it's harsh, but if more people want that, then I will do it. But yeah, so I did ignore that. I just didn't want to because he's still with his girlfriend in this book, and I didn't want to give her too much limelight because she leaves him. You can read it in the Look Inside on Amazon and the others and Apple. There's a sample chapter with Apple, Kobo, Google Play and Barnes & Noble. There's a look inside on all of those things. And in the look inside, it's within the first 10% of the book because this is the disruption to his ordinary world. It's just, it's like that first roll of the snowball down the hill for him. So that's what that is. And because she leaves the series so soon in the first book, I don't want to give her more space or more thought in this sort of prequel sort of story, because I don't give her much space in the Lawn, which is also a prequel short story. Because it goes the Locked Room, the Lawn, and then Suspicion. So there's two prequel things. But that's why I didn't, because I don't want to give her more time than what she deserves, because she's, you know, going to leave. And I don't want people to become attached to her in any way. So that's all of the things I can discuss in terms of working with my editor on my newly written Into the Dark novella. Now, I have an important question to ask you. Have you tried writing Into the Dark or discovery writing? Come on over to the blog post and share your thoughts and experiences in the comments section. And while I have this thought, the 100th episode is coming up, and I thought it might be nice to do a celebratory Ask Me Anything sort of session. I mean, I say ask me anything, but it's really writing, editing, revision, publishing, finding your first readers. But honestly, I'm pretty opinionated, so it could potentially be an ask me anything. So come on over to authorpreneurpodcast.com/question/ and submit your question for me to answer in the show. I mean, how many times can I say question in the same sentence, right? The next episode of the podcast will be a behind-the-scenes podcast diary where I discuss my writing, editing, publishing, and marketing tasks for March and April. Thank you for listening, and happy reading and writing, everybody. Thank you for listening to the Authorpreneur Podcast. If you love this episode, then hit the subscribe button and leave a review on your favorite podcasting app. I'm your host, Amelia D. Hay, and I'll see you in the next episode. Bye.